eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED lights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the Ed Milet Show.
Hi, everybody. It's Ed Milet. Welcome back to Max Out. I am so fired up about today's program. I've been chasing this lady to get on the show for...
Chasing for many, many...
Hard to catch. In fact, so hard to catch, I had to drive all the way to your house to do this today. So
you know this is
a great pad. It's a family home, which is reflective of you, too. But you know this is important to me today because we didn't shoot it at my house. I came to you. And this lady, most of you recognize her, but if you don't, she's a trailblazer. And she's an incredible mother. She's an author. She's one of the greatest college softball players of all time. She's an Olympic gold medalist, and she is many, many other things, but she's also really the first female baseball announcer in the history of ESPN, and she is also the host of Sunday Night Baseball with my friend Alex Rodriguez. And so we got all kind of stuff to cover today. So thank you for being here.
Get after it.
Good to have you here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I'm glad you're in my house.
I know. I'm pretty honored. It's cool. And we're sober today, guys. No alcohol in today's show.
I offered Scott.
She did. I wanted to keep it real. So thank you again for doing this. And I don't know if you realize it, but you're making history. Does it feel like it to you? I mean, that you've broken through all of these barriers? I mean, you're the first woman ever to do what you do in terms of the broadcasting realm. Do you ever think about that?
I don't think about it like history. I guess when you do stuff like that, it's for history. It's for when 30, 40 years from now and I got grandkids and we're sitting around the table and you look back. That's how I think of it. Mm-hmm. I think what it hits me more is that there's more responsibility.
So I
recognize, and this is more than just about me, that this isn't just me doing my job, but there are a lot of women, there's men, fathers, daughters, that depend on me to not screw up. I've recognized that from day one.
Yeah, it's true. When women knew that I was finally had booked you, I gotta tell you, I was struck by the level of emotion from some of the women about how much they're rooting for you. And you're so great at it, so they don't really need to worry about that. But it's interesting to me. I think when you're making history, you don't know it. It's not until you're done making it that you go, wow, that was profound. But in, you know, the 50, 80 year history of the sport and then all the television time, you're the first woman to do this. And so it's pretty significant. I had Christine Simmons on my show, who's the president of the LA Sparks, and she's an African-American woman. And she said to me, she says, I'm conscious of the fact that I'm the first and I want to do a good enough job so that I'm not the last.
Yeah, no. And that was honestly one of the biggest things. I talked to John Skipper, who was then president of ESPN, and him giving me the opportunity to be on Sunday Night Baseball, I was like, look, like, I just don't want this to be the, hey, we'll put her on for a couple games. Like, don't put me on unless it's something that we want to sustain. And not just with me, but just as far as opening the door to a lot of women. And that's where the responsibility kicks in. Because I screw up, that door closes.
Right.
I want to knock the damn door down and just like, come on, everybody.
Right.
Like,
well, you're doing it because just recently you just signed a multi-year deal with them, so it doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon, right? So
I'm excited. Yeah, I get to stay.
Congratulations. That's because you've done such an amazing job, and Alex is constantly telling me how incredible you are. And frankly, before you and I had met, I was familiar with you, but I must tell you, he raved about you in our private conversations about you. He thinks the world of you. So, but I want to go back because I want people to, you're not the after, you're in progress, but I want people to kind of know a little bit more because I think they know you as the broadcaster. But if you really dig deeper, you're an incredible athlete as well, right? So this woman won a gold medal and a silver medal in the Olympics. And in at Stanford in softball, right off camera, I said, you're one of the greatest college softball players of all time. He went, no, I'm not. And I said, well, at Stanford. She says, no, I'm not. But the truth is, you were a great athlete. Were you always a great athlete growing up?
No. Oh, my gosh, Ed. Like, I wish we had, a reel. I could just show you me. You know, around the holidays especially, my parents would break out, old videos of, me as a kid, me playing softball. I mean, I played all sports, but I was completely uncoordinated. Like,
what?
Oh gosh, Ed, like me in T-ball, right? The ball's on a stick, okay? Right, it's right. Not moving.
Right.
I would strike out. Like, but I'm like, I mean, my personality too. Right. Like, I'm like all into it, like right. Taking these huge hacks, trying right. To swing out of my shoes, right. And the ball's still sitting there on the stick. And right. Even right. Running down the first baseline, I look like Phoebe from Friends. Like, well,
are you serious? Like, when did you get good?
I mean, my dad was, you know, he's a legendary in this area, football, baseball coach.
Yep.
And I grew up on the sidelines. I grew up in the dugout. Coach's kid, you're just always practicing. Like,
yeah.
My dad didn't see the uncoordination or just the total, like, you know, wow. Like,
right.
he saw the athlete always, yep. And he saw the potential. And so, especially my younger sister and I, we worked all the time.
Mm.
Before you could eat dinner, you had the weight program you had to
Seriously?
Do. And this is like when your coach's kid. Like, yeah. I have friends to this day that said, I hated coming to dinner at your house because your dad would make us work out before
no way.
We could eat.
No
and
way.
I was like, oh, he made you do that too? And that yeah. Was just the norm. I was like, is that not what you
not
do at your
that?
House? Yeah, he's like, it was called military workouts. And he had like a military press bar. And then we'd have to do this full workout before you could eat dinner.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, he was intense.
It's funny because of a lot of the athletes I have on my show, not all of them, but usually one of the two parents instilled some sort of kind of crazy work ethic that they think is normal that nobody else in the world does when they were young. So it was your dad.
Yeah,
and your dad
sure.
Played college football at Fresno State, right?
Yes, dang, yeah. You did do your homework.
I did do my homework.
Yeah.
And I'm also told through a mutual friend of ours that your dad is a central figure in the sense that he's a huge fan of yours, but he'll also let you know what's up, both
oh,
when
yeah.
You played and in broadcasting.
Oh, yeah.
And that your mom is more just a support and a fan. So
yeah.
Describe the dynamic. Just people, I think people that have children want to know, how do you make something like this, right? So what was that dynamic
balance,
like or is?
The balance is key. And I think understanding your kid. I mean, I got two boys now, and my sister and I were super different. And so just understanding the personality. Like, I mean, my dad pushed me. But my mom was there to also, she was incredibly intelligent. So she pushed the school end of it.
Okay.
But then was softer on the athlete. She was always just like, you're doing a great job. No matter what, on the sports side. When it came to school, it was like, you can do better.
Okay.
Whereas my dad was like, schoolwork. Like, just get after it. And so they balanced each other,
yeah.
You know? And we could kind of find that happy medium. They both weren't, like, hardcore all the time.
Would your dad let you know after a game that something wasn't acceptable or you didn't play well?
Oh, he never let me know the opposite. Like, it was, I mean...
Okay, go ahead.
I can't remember until I got to college. And I remember, like, the first moment. But until I got to college, I don't remember him ever saying, like, good job. And I don't mean that in, like, a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
I just, the coach in him, I could be 3 for 4 with 3 home runs. And we talk about the one at bat I didn't get on base.
No kidding.
And that mentality is still inside of me of, you know, even in broadcasting, it's like, okay, like you can work and work, but there's always something you can get better.
Better, yeah.
And it's not looking at it like you're bad or he never was like, you're awful or he was never negative.
Mm-hmm.
He was just always trying to give that constructive criticism of like, okay, but what are we trying to do to get better?
I think sometimes, I'm that way a little bit too, and I think sometimes it says something to you that's powerful, which is like, we know you're better than this. I know you can be better than this. I think
yeah.
If you're willing to break the negative part down, even with your kids, because we're in this sort of positive PC world, like everything has to be...
Everyone gets a trophy.
Everyone gets
we're
a trophy.
All great.
But you said you remember the first time he
yes.
Validated something you did. What was that?
I was like, it was yesterday. It's funny. It's like such an emotional moment because it hit me like a lightning rod. And I'll never forget. We were in my parents' van. I was playing in a tournament. So I was at Stanford, freshman year. Preseason tournament, we're in San Diego, and we just played Cal State Northridge.
Okay.
I was up to bat with the bases loaded. I'm batting third as a freshman, so I'm feeling pressure, and in my mind, I'm like, this is who you want up to bat. You want the number 3 batter, bases loaded. This is a team that we should beat, and I struck out on a changeup, and I can remember the pitch, and it was a pretty fat changeup, too, and I don't know, like, just didn't see it, whatever, like, missed it. Game ends. We had it like a break, so my parents took me to lunch before we had to be back for the next game. And I remember sitting in the back seat behind my dad, my mom's over here, and I'm just like, I mean, as down as they come, and I'm ready for it. Like, tell me what I did wrong, like, you know, but I'm already like, I know I'm awful, like, you know. He pulled the car over and he turned around and he's like, Jesse, like, don't you know that you're the best athlete that our family has ever seen. And I was just like head up. Like, he's like, my dad played sports. He's like, I played in college. He's like, we had athletes. And he's like, I mean, he turned around to look at me and he was so like emotional and proud. And he had never even come close. And all of a sudden it went from like that to like, don't you know?
Wow.
Like, you're this down on a stretch. Like, don't you know who you are? Like, wow. you're the best damn athlete this family has seen. Mm. And to come from the coach, like my dad, and like,
massive moment.
Literally like changed me because it helped me see me for like the first time. Other than that, like up until that point, it was like just what, you know, he had done, just that constant, how can I be better? I'm not good enough. And all of a sudden I was like, wait, you think I'm like, you know, it was, I know it sounds cheesy, but it was, and from that moment on, it was like it shifted.
He
to this day, like, is my biggest fan, him and my mom, but like his ability now to say, I'm proud of you and you are accomplishing more than I could have ever imagined. And sometimes it strikes him that it was a female in the family. And he said that too. He's just like, of all the men that we have in our family and the jocks. And he's like, I never would have thought it would have been a woman that would be in our family that would do the things. And now he's sold like on women's athletics. And
so amazing.
It's cool.
I can just see your whole being changes when you talk about it. So that's wonderful. Man, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that much.
It was definitely one of those, you have them that sprinkled throughout your life. And that was one that literally was like the heavens opened up. And I was just like, wait, what?
Like, do you think you still, like when you're doing really well, you do something that's like even this new deal you signed, do you still kind of think of like your dad as one of the first people when you do something good?
I'm like, Ed, it's like I become, and I'm daddy's girl, and I'm close. My mom's my best friend. I feel like she doesn't get enough credit either. She's my best friend, but it's an easy relationship. You know, I was always daddy's girl, just vying for that attention constantly. It was never enough. And till this day, if he tells me he's proud of me, I'm like the 10-year-old girl that's like, really? Like, you're proud of me?
Wow.
Like, and it's funny because of all the, you know, social media and likes and all the things that you can get for whatever you might need, it comes back to my own father just saying, you know, four words.
Me too, by the way. Isn't that amazing? I'm in the exact same way. I have millions of people liking your stuff, and if my dad's proud of me, everything else is amazing. By the way, millions of people are nodding their heads right now. Some of them are crying, and they're in total agreement with you. So let's just finish this piece, though, because it's pretty incredible. This is such an accomplished woman. I love the title of the show is Max Out, but like you've really maxed out multiple areas. Like when I look at you, I'm like, I'm in your home. You can feel the spirit in your home and the love. And we're talking about your sons off camera and your husband. And just, I can feel this is such a loving family. And you were this, you've got this unbelievable pioneering career that we're really going to get into the teeth of in a minute. That's just, it's trailblazing. It's changing something forever, potentially. And it's you. It's probably got to blow your mind that it's you. But you were also an amazing athlete. And so don't be humble about this. Were you a four-time All-American?
Yeah.
Four-time All-American. Then you make the Olympic team and win a gold. What is winning a gold medal like?
What's cool is, okay, so we hear the national anthem how many times, you know, in your lifetime as growing up as a kid, you know, homeroom, games that you've played. I think what hit me with the Olympics, and this is a bit of my personality coming in. I mean, clearly I've loved the game of softball, dedicated most of my life to playing it. So there's that passion, right?
Yeah.
Then you get to the Olympics. And to me, in 2004, we had just gone into Iraq. So our political place in our country was very interesting at the time. That's me. Like, I'm someone that's very aware of a lot of that. And I remember, you know, getting into the dining hall. And the cool thing about the Olympics is the Olympic Village, you've got 10,000 athletes. You have more countries represented in the Olympic Village than you do in the United Nations. So my favorite piece of the Olympics, besides the on the field, was actually our meals.
Really?
Beyond the fact that I love to eat, but the fact that I would actually not sit with our team. I would go, and I remember clearly I wanted to sit down with the Iraqi soccer team. And none of them that I had met in line getting food spoke English. So I had met this Egyptian high jumper that was able to help me like translate. And so I went down and sat with the Iraqi soccer team with this new like friend that I met on the Egyptian track team, and literally just sat down and had conversations about what was happening between our two countries.
Oh my gosh, what a great story.
No, but it was like,
what did you get out of that?
Just like, well, honestly, how like upset they were, and but yet here we are, and they were so just like taken aback by the fact that I wanted to talk politics in the middle of this like entire arena. And they ended up inviting me back to their side of the village, and we just hung out. We spent like hours just kind of talking and getting into stuff. And you know, and it didn't stop there. You meet athletes from all over, but the point is, when you have USA across your chest, like I wanted to know what that really meant. And when you win a gold medal and now the anthem is playing, it brought such a sense of pride for our country that I don't want to say, I mean, I was always proud to be an American, but you know, you grow up here, you don't really realize. And for me, talking to not just Iraqi athletes, but honestly, you know, athletes that, you know, finding out that they don't have any female representatives from their entire country. So knowing here that I grew up and not, I had opportunities galore from the age that I could first walk, like throwing a ball and playing with other kids. And so to answer your question, like, you get a gold medal, but like, honestly, like I lost it. And I'm not like very emotional, like crying very much. I lost it. Wow. When we got up on that podium and our flag was raising and you have USA across your chest, and it's like you combine that, like, of course, all the hard work to win that gold, your teammates, your sisters, that love. But there was this whole like huge, it hit me in Athens, how proud I was to be from the country I was from, and to understand what that meant too, not just, but you know, warfare and all the different things that make it complicated.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're not proud of, but at the end of the day, it's USA. This is who I am.
Wow. What an amazing story. Like, that is an amazing story. I can just picture you sitting there talking to this Iraqi player. Like, what an amazing experience.
And it was funny because my teammates were like, what are you doing? What is going on? And I wouldn't give up because I was like, because they were looking, even they, like when I first started to try, I was like trying to converse with them and it wasn't working. And they're just looking at me like, what are you trying? Like, you know? And so then I finally got a friend of mine that I was able to, okay, can you help me? And so then I went back to their table and they're like, she's back.
Like, she is again.
And I was like, I'm going to do this. And I'm glad I did because my first impression, I'm sure they would have just been like, oh, crazy American, like, you know? But we ended up getting to know each other.
What a wonderful story.
As much as you could, you know? And I loved that because I couldn't fly over to Iraq and talk to people. And yet we have this huge ability, and I know it sounds, I guess, cheesy, but within the Olympic arena to cross any border and have, like, real conversations.
Yeah, I don't think it's cheesy, and I actually also think it's kind of a metaphor for who you are, which is that when there's an opportunity presented to you, you jump all over it in every aspect. And not everybody listening to this has the opportunity to go win a gold medal or be in the Olympics, but they do have a chance to get out of their comfort zone and go explore experiences and do something extraordinary. And this is no knock on the rest of your teammates, because they obviously won a gold medal, so there's something you share with them forever. But you were the one who went and did that, right? And so that really is important. Like, people, there's experiences all around you every day, every year. There's something where you could step into an uncomfortable space and just have an experience.
Well, going up to a stranger, like when you talk about uncomfortable, like, yeah, that's extreme, like someone from another country. But like, I think all the time of times that I've gone up to someone that makes you uncomfortable, because, and I do, I tell you, I get that look a lot, like, what, like, are you, because I'll kind of stumble through, like, I'm not the most, like, I come up to a con, and I was like, I really want to talk to you, you know, and it hasn't always worked out, too. I've had people that literally have just walked away and been like, you're crazy.
You're crazy.
But the point is, like, I'll never know, and more of my doors have opened because I've gone up to complete strangers.
Really?
By myself and just jumped. And I don't even know where I'm going. I'm like, I just know I need to talk to you.
Ooh,
so I'm going to start kind of bubbling through this.
This is very good.
Awkwardly talking to you. And then hopefully at some point we find like a conversation and connect.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
But I think people appreciate that.
They do appreciate that. I do the same thing, and I am awkward at it, and it's gone weird for me a few times too. But like, I want a rich life. Like, I want experiences. I don't want everybody else's life. And that's what I love about you. You haven't done that. You have this standard where, like, you want to dominate, right? And you did. She's one of the greatest softball players that's ever played that sport before. And it gets lost because you've become this pioneering broadcaster, I think, for a lot of people, too. And you're so great at that. And I'm curious, you went and played professionally after that. But I want to go into this time, because I think people can relate to this, where your initial dream ends, right? So You maxed out that dream, but it kind of ends. And so there's a lot of people that listen to this, their first dream didn't work, their first business didn't work, their first marriage didn't work, right? There's things they've had where they're in that transitional period, like, how do I put myself back together? How do I step into this space? Did you think you were going to be a baseball broadcaster? And what did you do during that window when that dream ended? What does that kind of window of time look like for you?
Ed, I feel like the biggest thing for me, and I mean, you can ask my husband, like I'm always, I always have my hand in multiple things. Like I've never been able, and even just in general, like I can't do just one thing. Okay. And so even while I was playing, to be honest, going back to why I chose to go to Stanford was like, even though there were huge softball schools, and I know to someone sitting there, like, why would you want to go to a softball school? It's not like I'm some like football player is going to sign with the NFL or, you know. But when you're 17, 16 years old, like you want to go to the big name schools that are still good schools, but they're like, they're going to win a national championship and all of your favorite players went there.
Right.
I chose Stanford because my whole plan was like, I'm not going to play softball after college. Like I need to make sure that I'm thinking about like what this degree is going to do versus just a great softball place.
You have a big life. I always say that to people, many of my friends, and I have this too, I just have a big life, meaning just have a lot of things going on at any given time.
Yeah.
And if you don't learn to navigate that when you're not successful, just having a lot of things going on, it's very difficult to navigate having a big life once you are successful. That's why a lot of people get to a level of success, they can't maintain it, because you've always juggled lots of stuff and had crazy hours, I assume. True for you?
Yeah. And the bad part is I don't know how to not do that. So there is a negative that can come with it. Like it, and by no means has my path been perfect in the sense, like I've juggled too many things and it's gotten way out of control. And
me too.
Now my off season, so you can relate.
Yeah.
I literally plan stuff. Because, like, if I'm not working, because baseball season isn't going on, I drive my husband crazy because I'm like, let's fly here, let's do this, let's get the kids involved with that. And, like, I'm just, like, over-planning because I can't just, like,
how do you balance that? People, will, I'd be really remiss if I didn't ask you, and then we'll get back in. How are you at balancing all this stuff? Mother, wife, you know, broadcaster, author, how do you do that?
I've learned that like even the word balance is a bad word for me.
Me too. I just put a video out before I pulled up here today. I don't even believe in the concept. Yeah. I think seeking it's good, but you can't get it.
Because I get that question a lot. Like, how do you balance, especially family and work, like being a mom? And literally that word like makes me cringe because especially I feel like, and I'm not saying that men don't have it too, but I feel like for women that are moms, there's this idea that like, you know, working mom, I can, you know, be hair done, go out and save the world, come home, apron on, dinner served, house is clean, kids are sitting neatly with a little, you know, heck no. Like, I mean, you should see, I mean, my kids are in school right now, otherwise they'd be hanging all over crazy, like, you know, wrestling you and, you know, it's crazy and it's not perfect and there isn't a balance. What I've learned and accepted is that there's times when I'm on the road and I'm missing stuff at home. So the balance is not. Like, I'm all in on work, and I'm not all in at home.
Yep.
And that's hard to swallow.
Yes.
There's times I'm at home, and I'm with the kids, and I blow off a conference call. And I'm like, you know what? I want to be in this moment.
Yep.
And honestly, work suffers for it. How do you navigate? How do you, you know, it's definitely imperfect. And the biggest message I just constantly want to get out there, especially for women that are considering having children, can I do it all? It's not about doing it all. It's doing what you're doing in the moment the best that you can.
Boy, very good.
And being okay, like swallowing, like, and that's where, because I get it all the time, the guilt and this image that I have to be like the PTA mom and the, no.
Wow.
I'm me. And I think for every female out there is, I just had a friend of mine who just was debating, she's in broadcasting, was trying to decide if she should have a child. And I was like, our kids will adapt to who we are and the life that we create, not the life that society said, you know what, this is what children have to do. This is the book on every family.
Yeah.
This is just our family.
I like, I'm so thrilled you said that, because for you to say it's better than the way that I would say it, and because you give permission to a whole gender of people who are the ones who most of the time are the most criticized for that. For some reason, it seems more acceptable for a man to have certain areas of his life spiking. And that's what I say too. There's at any given time, different areas of your life are what I'd call spiking and
that's
take your attention. And you're exactly right the way you even described it with your hands. But it seems as if it's somewhat acceptable when a male does it. And I don't want to overcook the pie here, but it does seem like women take more criticism oftentimes, or maybe feel more guilt about certain areas spiking at any given time.
It's both. Like, because I work with all men.
Right.
And it's amazing to me how, I even had a manager once ask me the question, I think we were at spring training, he was like, oh, how long are you here? I'm like, oh, like 10 days, I'm going around to all the camps. And he's like, you have two kids? And I was like, yeah. He's like, how do you do it? How are you away? And I was like, how many kids do you have? He's like, two. I'm like, how do you do it? Like, you're here for 3 months? Like, and I didn't mean it like, mm-hmm. and I know this person well. Mm-hmm. It was just trying, and he was just like, oh, mm-hmm. like, I'm like, it's the same. You're mm-hmm. a dad. Like, mm-hmm. a dad's just as important as a mom. Mm-hmm. Like, we're parents, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not perfect, mm-hmm. but like, 100%, and there is guilt for sure that yeah. I throw on myself, but 100%, like, I never see men, even in interviews, or they never get asked, like, how do you be a dad mm-hmm. and you're working? Mm-hmm. Like, I've never even heard that question before.
So true.
I get it all the time.
Yeah, and, it's so true.
And
by
definitely
the way,
judged by it.
Yeah, very, very, very compelling answer. That's so true. So there's this time, your dream ended, you're juggling multiple things at once. You get into broadcasting through the softball space first, right? Is that how it ends yeah. up happening? Were you, don't be humble either. I'm really curious because you said you weren't a good softball player at first, right? Yeah. You had to work at that. Did this come more natural? Were you pretty good at this in the very beginning, would you say?
I think I was just, what surprised me, because mm-hmm. when I first got asked to audition, mm-hmm. Because there was a need, you know, basically mm-hmm. softball was exploding on television mm-hmm. and they just needed more people. I remember my agent called and I just started laughing. And I was like, can you imagine a mic in front of me, no filter? Like, I'd be fired first day. Like, there's no way. Like, and he's like, just go and try. Like, just, it's not going to hurt. No one's watching. It's an audition. So I did. And I flew out there and I was nervous. I didn't understand. I had called a few friends, watched some games, but that was about it. Show up, Beth Mowins, who's now my broadcast partner, like, for life on softball, had flown in for it. Never had met her before. And we sit down and they show a game, mm-hmm. you know, and we basically jump in on it. I can't tell you how natural it felt. Mm-hmm. So I can't say, like, I don't have video of that yeah. early phase, but I recognized right away, oh, I can do this.
Okay.
It's like kicking it on the couch with your friends and mm-hmm. stuff that I realized I was already doing. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, did you see her back foot? Like on that, you know?
Yeah.
And that passion and excitement that yeah. just genuinely I have. Mm-hmm. Plus the like knowledge of being a coach's kid my whole life and
good point.
And literally every night breaking down video. That's what we did.
It's so weird to me, but that's so cool though.
No, I know.
That's awesome.
It's
actually beautiful because it's part of this story that explains you, like this work ethic and that extra stuff and the extra stuff. And like, it's what people need to hear. It's like, this is the true story of how you become special. And you'll never, even when we're off camera, it's like, you just don't accept that you're, when I say special, I don't mean like someone else can't replicate it. I mean like unique in that you've kept pushing past levels where most people said, my will to win's over. Like, okay, I won, that's enough. And that's, most people in life, they do that. Eventually their will to win kind of gets bought. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can buy them with enough accolades or enough money or enough success or enough acknowledgement. And the really unique people in life, Alex is this way too, is that there's no destination at which place they want to stop growing.
Yeah.
Their will is not for sale. I hope that, I think I'm that way.
Well, there's a screwed up, I can speak for myself, mm-hmm. so I don't want to speak for you or right. Alex or anyone else, right. but there's a screwed up insecurity that comes with it.
Yes.
And for me, like that, it's not like the best trait either. Like mm-hmm. there is a part of me that just, you know, I've learned to be able to look myself in the mirror and see a strong, athletic, beautiful, mm-hmm. like all these positives. But for a very long time, there's that sense of like, I'm not good enough.
Yes.
I have to be better. I got to work hard. Mm-hmm. And I know now, even in my own space, like I have to work double, triple as hard just to prove, unfortunately, that like, I know you don't think I belong, but mm-hmm. I'm gonna kick your butt in like just yep. proving
by
like,
being great,
just that I'm yep. prepared and yep. that I'm saying my points and I'm yep. I'm who I am.
I'm really glad you said that. Like I'm loving this because I'm insecure too, and most successful people I've had this insecurity that they're not good enough. And it doesn't always come from just a place of confidence or identity. Like I have a really high identity, so do you. I have self-confidence. Self-confidence is more like self-trust. So I really trust myself, but it doesn't mean I'm not insecure, but I'm not measuring up.
Yeah.
And I also think really successful people hold themselves to such a high standard that there's always this power that's pulling them to another place compared to where they are, to where they know they could be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And yeah. I think you have that. But the way you became a baseball, I mean, you really got the seat. As I understand the story, this is another example sort of, you had done some games, but this is another example of an opportunity opened up and like, you jumped. And so, we don't need to say who or what it was, but isn't it accurate that there was somebody who had been suspended, there was a role, and if I'm wrong, correct me and tell it the right yeah. way, but part of it is you ended up getting a shot for a very short window yeah. in the main seat because of an issue with somebody else, and you seized the moment. Is that about right at some point?
I mean, I would already, yes, and for Sunday Night Baseball.
Right.
Which is what I'm doing now. Right. And you're right. It was the timing of all of it, because I had done my first ever national baseball game. And it was kind of like hidden. Not that ESPN had hidden it. It was just the time of year was in August. I was replacing someone on ESPN2 on a Monday, and it wasn't a great game at all, as far as teams and market. So it was like, yeah, let's have your first game be on this like easier stage. And that was on a Monday.
Okay.
The suspension happened on Wednesday. And I got a call Thursday asking me to be on that Sunday night. So I had just done my first ever Major League Baseball game.
So the training wheels are off quick.
Right. Let's try this.
Mm-hmm. But you had lots of on-air time, lots of softball time, lots of stuff in softball.
And I'd covered baseball. Right. Like I'd done features and more reporting.
Yes.
And I think for people that don't understand like the nuances of broadcasting, reporting and being an analyst, it all sounds the same, but it's totally different.
Okay.
And changing geography, because I'd actually been an analyst for the Men's College World Series, college baseball, from the sideline. So I was doing the same job. Mm-hmm. But Phil Orlins, who's actually my coordinating producer, my boss now, he said the point to me. He's like, I'd love for you to continue being an analyst, but until we put you in the booth, that geographical change of maybe 60 yards will change how people see you forever. And I was actually satisfied, as long as I could get my content in of not... I don't want to say just being a reporter, but like really like breaking down swings and doing that. I didn't care where I was. I was going to do it from the sideline.
Yep.
And that was so accepted there. Because at the end of the day, even if I was breaking down a swing, people were like, oh yeah, she's a female on the sideline. That's where she belongs.
They've seen female sideline reporters in the NFL,
NBA. Yeah, that she can stay there. That's good. No matter what she's saying, like as long as she's there, we're good.
Whoa,
it was literally just going up the stairs and sitting in a booth that changed everything.
Whoa. So Monday... You get the call Wednesday?
Thursday. Okay. The suspension happened Wednesday. Thursday, they needed a replacement, so I get a call, and they still weren't even sure. They were just kind of like, we're thinking about using you. And I'm like, oh, what Sunday? They're like, oh, like 2 days? And I was like, well, I need to fly somewhere. And like for that Monday game, Ed, just to give you like my nerdiness, I probably prepared 3.5 months for that one Monday game because I'd known I was doing it. So I'd flown all over the country. I met with the teams. I was like, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, who's playing? Like, what's going on? Like, I had to fly, like, and I live here in L.A., and it was a Dodger home game against the Cubs. And it was the game that Jake Arrieta threw a no-hitter, which was the first ever no-hitter on Sunday Night Baseball.
Come on!
In decades.
So God's
first game.
God's got his hand in a little bit here then, right? Like, come on. So your first daggum game...
was a no-hitter. The only no-hitter to ever be on Sunday Night Baseball.
That's
was
so...
my first game.
Look at that. My hairless arm has chills on it. That's so amazing. I didn't know that. Yeah. And so you step into that. Here's one of these things you said earlier. There's a few of those moments in your life.
Yes. Oh, right? Yeah.
This is one of them.
And I can remember that game. And and you're so right with, there being a hand for sure. Because I remember Buster Olney, who's the reporter, works on the game, who I didn't know well at that point, Sunday morning. So I come in, I live in LA. I know the Dodgers, like, thank goodness.
Yes.
And I'm offensive minded, so I'm all about hitting. Mm-hmm. So I came in with like tons of Dodgers, tons of hitting.
Yeah.
So you know what happens for those that don't understand what a no-hitter is. Like, there's no offense from the Dodgers the entire game. But it was Saturday. I'd come over to the game, and Buster introduced me to Jake Arrieta, who was going to be the pitcher for the Cubs. Obviously, none of us know this at the time.
Yeah.
And just walked over, recognized that this is her first day on the job. She knows nobody. Mm. Let me just be a good dude.
Really?
And introduce her to the starting pitcher tomorrow, because that'll probably just help her a little bit.
Wow.
He introduces me, kind of breaks the ice to because I'd never met Jake and I'm nervous. And plus you're in a clubhouse. It's just a different environment. And the next thing I know, Jake and I start talking. Him and I clicked right away. Because his brain, his understanding of his body. We end up talking for 45 minutes. I got more information on Jake Arrieta than I could ever. And I didn't even write anything down. It was just like you connect with someone.
Did you use it during the game?
Well, then that's what allowed me.
That's all you had, right? That's what your stuff was.
Yeah. But I would have gone in with just like Dodgers offense, like, yes,
nothing
with no hits.
Yeah.
And instead, I could dive into Jake because I'd just spoken to him the day before about just like how he throws a slider, why he gets his body into certain positions. And it was like amazing stuff.
You guys have to understand something. This is the first time Sunday Night Baseball, right? Like it's... And you step in here, and it's a daggum no-hitter.
It's like history-making game.
But you crushed.
Crazy.
And what happens from there? Because, guys, in the history of the sport, there's been one female to sit, also happens to be a Latina, by the way, who sits in that seat, right? What happens? Like, do you do another one and then another one? And they're like, hey, we think you're going to come back, or what happens?
Well, it was just supposed to be the game. And then the suspension ended up getting worse.
Right.
And so it ended up carrying out through the rest of the regular season. But it was just supposed to be the one game. And then it literally, like, it was crazy because it was like, okay, like, that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to go back to, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And the amount of media that came after that was incredible just because it was a no-hitter. So there's so many people, like, finally tuning in. They're like, wait, is that a woman's voice?
Yeah.
Like, so just like, all these events happening. And then they kept me on and this was early September by this point. So it was another, like, 4 or 5 games. It wasn't, like, a ton.
Yeah.
But I got to finish off the season and then do our wild card game, which is the first postseason game.
You did a postseason game, too.
That year. Yeah, okay. It was Astros-Yankees.
Okay.
And then they asked me to come back, and they signed me on to continue. And now I'm going into year 4.
That's unreal. And I got to tell you, I told you, we met in a gym, by the way, in St. Louis through Alex. And I told you this when we met. And I'm not, I mean this.
It's like perfect that I saw you in a gym because you kind of just like blended right in. I had no idea.
Right.
And then here you are in a gym because you're so buff. I was just like,
oh,
you're like
Thank
the
you.
Fixture
Thank
of like
you.
The
That's
the
really nice. Whatever. Whatever. They started
he was
to go,
kissing his biceps,
yeah.
And I was like...
Well, once you guys went to that yoga room, like, I got to go.
I know, I thought you were going to do the workout with us.
I left her in the yoga. But I got to tell you, I told you this then, and I say this to you now. I was a broadcast major. I have a show. I also played baseball. And I think you're incredible at what you do. You are my favorite broadcaster. And whether you were a man or a woman. And the reason is that... your content preparation's off the charts, but people that are great at something bring a particular energy to it. And this is a lesson for everybody watching this, no matter what you do. Influence is energy, persuasion is energy, attraction is energy, and you have the ability to transfer energy through a camera, visually. You also do it with your voice. I think you're unbelievable at what you do. And also the way you break down the game is obviously very scientific, but you're incredible what you do, whether you were a male or a female. I just think you're excellent. I just want to tell you that.
Thank you.
You really are. And
Thank
I enjoy
you.
Watching you, and I watched you for so long. And then, obviously, it morphs into just a couple questions about this, too. Because now it's changed the dynamic now. Now there's like 3 of you in this box now, right? There's 3 people in there. And then sitting next to you is one of the 5 greatest people I think ever to, and you could argue even the best, but certainly in the top 5 ever to actually play that sport.
Yeah.
How did that impact you at all? I'm wondering, that dynamic of working with Alex, the fact that he was such an incredible player, did that cause any thoughts, changes, the way you delivered things, anything like that?
I mean, so who I'd worked previously with was Aaron Boone, who was a hitter, wasn't nearly the hitter, obviously, of Alex, but was offensive. I didn't work with the pitcher. So
and is now also, by the way, the manager of the Yankees.
Who's now the manager of the Yankees.
Right.
And so that was like for him, for Aaron and I, like learning how, when we're both hitting-minded, more so neither one of us were a pitcher, to kind of figure out that balance. And we would talk and kind of, to be honest, like you just get to know what gets people excited. Because we're a team. So what's going to make a great broadcast? Like I could say the perfect thing, Alex could say the perfect thing, but if we're not all on the same page, and Matt Vescursion, who's our play-by-play, it doesn't make for a good broadcast. So what's going to get you like, what? So that was my thing with Alex, was finding out what gets you excited. Like obviously, we know how your records, everything you were as a player. But then there's this whole knowledge side to him that you recognize, which you don't see a lot in super talented players because, I mean, let's be real, they're 5 years old and they just can hit. So they never really learn anything.
Exactly
they're
right.
Just like, they
That's
rake.
Why many of them make the worst coaches.
Yes.
Right.
They can't teach because they're just like, just do it.
Exactly.
Like,
what's wrong
That's
with
what
you?
I did.
Right. Exactly.
Alex is the exact opposite. Like, he not only is incredibly talented, but then he does his homework and his research and just understands and dives in and just it's endless, like the amount of knowledge that he wants to learn, and even as a broadcaster now. So what was interesting and what we had to learn was just like, okay, what gets I never wanted to step on him. I wanted him to, like, our broadcast to make sure people, someone hits a home run, like, I realize this, and as much as we can say, like, I'm great at all these things, like, I want to hear from Alex on what he thought. You know what I mean? Well, because he's Alex. Like, I want, when we're breaking down, like, whatever it is, anything, honestly, in the game, I want to hear what Alex Rodriguez would do. Because that's, I mean, he's another level within the game that we're covering. And I can read him now and feel his, like, body sitting next to me. So I can tell when he's still thinking. So, okay, I can jump in. and he can always follow. But then there's time, and now, like, we, you know, we can tap, and, like, it's almost just like, I got this, you know?
Yes.
I will always take a backseat to Alex with, as far as when he is excited and he has that energy, you talk about energy, because when he does that, I feel like he's one of the best broadcasters out there.
Yeah. There's team dynamics and everything that people are listening to here. So it's like, you can't just, nobody wins in business or anything like solo. There's people around you all the time. One thing he tells me about you all the time is, like, you have no idea how hard this lady works and how prepared she is. Those are the things about you. And then the other thing that he's told me is just, like, she always is thinking about how to put me in the best position to win. And that's, this is what he says about you. And that's a lesson for everyone with any company, any business. You have to be in a broadcast booth. It's your work ethic, it's your preparation, and it's putting the people around you in the best position to win, which you need to get credit for, because not only are you great on your own, but you're great also, and your knowledge level of the game is just through the roof.
But that also helps you. Like, I just, I don't know, and this is playing team sports your whole entire life, but, like, if you want to win, I want to win. And I'm competitive. Like, I get it. If it's me in an arena, like, boxing match, me versus you, like, there ain't no team. Like, I'm kicking your butt. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about success in pretty much anything you do, even when you're working on a project, it takes a team. Raising children. And not just my husband and I. I mean, we got, like, lots of people that help us and support us. Like, and I've learned that, like, I can't do it myself. And I learned that as a teammate. Like, when I played on teams where I could be the best hitter, the best athlete, hit a home run every time and we lose. I don't want to lose.
I love that.
I want to win.
I love that.
So you win by figuring out your teammates.
Because of the role you're in, not everyone's going to love you. You got haters and detractors, right? How do you deal with that? Because people out there have them too. If you're going to do anything great in your life, get ready. Someone's coming at you. Do you not care? Does it bother you? What do you do with it?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess I'd love to sit here and be like, doesn't bother me. Screw all you haters. Like, I think I tried that for a little bit. They do. They get to you. And not all of them. I mean, I've changed my relationship with, like, social media, not reading, because you talk about you focus on the losses. I also focus on the negative. Like, people could come and say overly positive things over and over and over, and I gloss over it. I read it, but I don't let it sink in. Someone comes at me with something negative, and I reread it, and I reread it, and it's like, you know, and then I find out they have 5 followers, or, like, you know, and I'm like, why am I focused in on this egghead, because it's like not even a real avatar. I don't even know if they're human, you know, and here I am, and they're gonna affect my day. They're gonna affect, and my early years, like 3 years ago, a Sunday night baseball, back in the day, a Sunday night baseball, like, I get on air and all of a sudden their words would come in my head. Like, shut up, you're not good enough, shut up, you didn't play, shut up, like, and I would start talking and I would stop talking.
My goodness.
And that's when I realized, Jess, you got to stop. Like, you got to figure out, because they're not going away.
Wow.
And so you can't let them affect the way that you go about doing what you do.
Thank you for saying that. I'm amazed that you said that. How did you do it?
What I learned is, so Twitter is, like, the worst of them, even though I use Twitter and I love it for other reasons. I don't look at my mentions for, like, 24 to 48 hours after a Sunday night baseball game, because that's when they're strong. And they're strong positive and they're strong negative. Everyone has a strong reaction to me. No one's just like, oh, it's a, unfortunately, like, no one's like, oh, it's a female, no big deal.
Right,
it's a
big deal.
So everyone has some sort of reaction. And so I just don't read them. And when I come back on there, it's died down. If anyone has anything to say, it's not, like, crazy. And if someone really wants to come up and say something to me to my face, or I found that that is always constructive. Like, so whoever has the balls to actually, like, come up to me and be like, I didn't think you did a good job with it. And I've had people come up and say that. We can actually have a conversation.
Right. Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm so relieved, because that means you listen to me.
Yeah.
I mean, half the time it's like, oh, you're a woman. I'm like, does anyone, like, hear me? I know I'm a female. I've known that my whole life. Thank you for making me realize my gender.
Yeah.
But it's literally when it's something that's like, oh, you listen to me.
Yeah.
Because that I can take. And we might even still disagree. I might still argue, but no, his back foot was in that position. But now we're having a real human conversation, not an egghead, I hate you, go away.
I really appreciate you talking about it, because I think people need to know that is part of what you face. It's part of what everybody will face if they're going to do anything great in their life that's just different. Like, if you're the first entrepreneur, you're the first person trying to make 6 figures, you're the first person trying to go to college, you know, you're going to switch through a career your whole family thought you should be in. But you do face that. And so I've always wondered how, because they affect me even. It's really strange. Like, I'm in this mental toughness position I'm supposed to be in. And even yesterday, there was a video out and someone made a criticism. But I've also distinguished between, you know, what I think is legitimate criticism and just one of these blank avatars who just hates people, you know. But I appreciate you.
But it's still, like, that's the thing is, like, and I've gotten better. And I think our skin gets thicker the more
time.
Of it we get. I mean, I come from a sport in softball where everyone's pretty much, like, positive and maybe little things here and there. But everyone's just lifting you up, lifting you up. So in the beginning, it was hard to, like, just hear, like, a lot of just... And my thing is like, I don't know, my husband makes fun of me because I'm very naive in that, like, I really believe, like, I don't know, like, there's something good in, like, everybody.
Me too.
And so when people are... It's not that... It's more like I can feel their hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've said this. I'm like, I just want to sit down with them and be like, why do you hate me?
Right.
Like,
why do you hate me?
And you can hate me after this,
right.
But can we just talk about it? Like,
what I found,
why are you so angry?
Yeah, but what I found overall is that for the most part, and I don't mean this to hurt anybody's feelings, they hate them. Like, the time it takes to type something like that, and by the way, it always isn't more negative than positive, because when you do something very well, people aren't likely to go, you did this very well. It's usually you're going to get an overwhelming majority of the people who type something to you that's negative, but typically they're projecting upon you something that's bothering them in their own life. And I remind myself of that all the time, and I actually try to help them. If I'm going to respond, I usually try to respond by helping them. So, but everybody listen
that's
to
awesome.
Her. Everybody listen to her, because that is one of the things when you're pioneering, when you're trailblazing, there's more of this than you can imagine with her, and you deal with it very well. The way you're dealing with it is you're winning. So all of you that are like, how do I deal with it? You got to win. You're winning. She's freaking winning. Like, she just renewed. She's so great at what she does. You know, the 1% of the people out there decide to type something. Obviously, everybody else thinks you're going pretty damn good because you just renewed, right?
Well, and I think I was tested for the first time in my life since probably like high school, when you're battling through like 50, like awkwardness, like who am I?
Yeah.
Like, you know, your insecurities are at an all-time high. And then, you know, through my life, I found this very confident, like, I can kick ass in life. Like, I'm going to do this, you know? And I found this very confident person. And all of a sudden, when you think you got it, like, you know, I was right back to being 15 again.
I know.
And so I had to, like, really look inside me and find out, like, why is this affecting me? Mm. What about me? What are the weaker parts? And I had to get strong again. I thought I was so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I preached it. I mean, all my whole life before this, all I did was speak to young girls about, like, being an Olympic athlete and finding strength and standing out. And here I am not even listening to my own words. And so that, like, it was like a slap in the face of, like, how do I find that strong person again that apparently I've been not faking, but, like, thinking this whole time, like, I'm so strong. And then one person comes, or not one person, but...
I know what you mean.
And they come and attack you. And the next thing I know, I'm like... Oh, wow. And I start doubting myself, and I'm stopping in the middle of a broadcast what I'm saying because I heard so many people telling me to shut up. And so I'm like, you know what? I really had to find myself again.
Wow.
And I had lost her. Like, I don't know, you know, I thought that she was always there, but it was actually kind of cool because I thought once you graduate high school, all the awkwardness of, like, figuring all that stuff out, but it can come at any age. And I learned that.
Man, there's a lot of reasons why we did today, but for me, like, this is the reason. Because it's interesting. This is so good for everyone to hear, like, they're listening in on me and you on this. But I'm in the space, so, of teaching people how to win and be mentally tough and change their confidence and their identity and all these things. I've been talking about it forever, typically in front of favorable audiences all the time, right? And I was that insecure, shy, very unconfident young guy, too. And it's amazing, even the way that you worded it, that dude's still there. And I didn't know he was still there until I went in this and I got some criticism for a thing or two here. And I shouldn't say even me, that sounds arrogant, but I went back to, like, maybe I don't want to do this. That's not worth it, you know? And I went back to that guy for a while too. I'm like, oh, you've been, like, full of shit for a while here. Like, you aren't this completely strong, studly, completely have all the answers guy. Exactly the same thing. And I had to kind of rediscover that in myself too. Like, I need to practice what I'm preaching. And I think for everyone to know this, there's going to be moments where you do step back. That I don't think that dude, like, completely ever goes away from who I used to be.
No.
And you have to work like hell to keep him away. Like, once you think he's away, he's still there, or she's still there, so.
But it makes you human. Like, that's what I realized is, like, I'd be talking to these girls, and I've learned the more I share that, that I say, there's times I look myself in the mirror and I don't see what I want. Mm-hmm. I see all the things that I could be doing better, and it's real, it's relatable. Mm-hmm. And so then I have to find that strength now every day. Like, mm-hmm. I got to figure out, and it's easy to have the cover, mm-hmm. you know, because I am a strong person.
Yep.
That person is there,
mm-hmm.
but there also is the other.
Yes.
And it isn't until the haters come out, or even honestly, my own.
Your own criticism of yourself, me too.
That's actually what comes out the most.
Me too.
My own little Twitter handle in my head.
No, me too, it's the worst one. I gave a speech a while ago that wasn't good, by my standards.
Yeah.
In front of a lot of people, maybe like 30,000 people, and these guys filmed me afterwards on my jet, and I think I almost looked like the verge of tears. You know, like, how do you feel like you did today? I said, honestly, terrible. You know, and I'm back to that guy again. But I actually think it's a little bit healthy, like you said, because I'm looking for improvement in me when I do those things. So really, really grateful that you shared that with everybody, because everyone's going through that and you go through it to a large extent. So I'm glad that you said it that way. Couple more things then.
Yeah.
You got a book.
Yeah.
It's right here. It's been here the whole time.
Hi, book.
So what is There's No Base Like Home? You and your sister wrote this book, right?
Yes.
Who's it for and what is it about? Talk about a busy woman. So,
well, it came out this year. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, I never realized, mm-hmm. writing a book, I don't know what I thought. Like, sure.
Yeah.
It took years.
Yes.
And honestly, my sister wasn't a part of it at first. It was just me. Mm-hmm. They were going to kind of like get like a ghostwriter that kind of mm-hmm. helps navigate you. And I just, you know, struggling to get through it because my life had changed and all this stuff was happening. And then they decided, you know what, your sister, she's 11th grade English teacher, Alana Dusan, and they were like, has she ever written anything? I'm like, no, like, what if you guys did this together? I mean, the book was always about two softball sisters, basically girls growing up trying to navigate everything, right?
Ah.
Trying to navigate life, trying to navigate cultural. You know, there's definitely a little bit of the Hispanic, but it's not even the Hispanic. It's more of just like your family, that all you've known, but now you're getting pressured by friends to believe and think other things. Mm. You know, and then the sport aspect, which is what I love, because it's got the softball in there. But then two sisters. And so to write this with my sister.
How cool.
And even though it's definitely a fiction, it is my family.
Really?
And it just turned out that way.
Based in truth.
The stories there, I mean, I cried when I finished it. And it was really cool because my dad, and we had talked about my father earlier, when my dad, who doesn't read books, no offense, Dad, but he just doesn't read books, when he read this book, I mean, he got emotional.
He did.
And it's because, I mean, even the illustrations, like he's got a big Fu Manchu mustache, big Mexican, like, and so even the illustrator, like, nailed it.
Really?
Like, getting his idea, but yeah, it's our family. But there's so much reality in there.
Okay,
too.
Who should read it? What age would you say?
I mean, it's geared towards 8 to 12 year olds.
Okay.
But I don't know. I have so many. I mean, I have so many people that have read it. Like honestly, women that I'm friends with have gone and read the book, and you know, it just dives into so many different things. And like I said, you might think it's 8 to 12 year old stuff, but
it's adult stuff too.
I mean, we wrote it as adults with the mindset of what it was like then, but it definitely, I felt myself get in here and just how you kind of battle and find yourself.
Wow.
That sounds so like, you know, but it really is a constant, and what we talked about, a constant battle and just getting back to like being different. Like, and you said that, you said special, like what makes you special? My thing is like everyone has something about them that's different.
That's right.
And like it comes in all these different forms, but we're so pressured, Ed, and I feel like I can only speak as women, but to fit in, you know, to look like everyone else, to act like everyone else, to have the cool, like whatever it is, to fit in.
Yeah.
But standing out is where it's at.
Yes.
And standing out is literally finding the things that make you different and owning them and waving that flag and being like, this is who I am.
I already know where you're going to be eventually, just so you know, like this is the space you're going to be in eventually because your stuff is so good and it's so true. And the people that I know that are the happiest and most successful are the most self-aware. And that's what you are. And that's what we're talking about today. It's about being self-aware, but the things that you're strong at, your struggles, the little girl that's still in there, you're just a very self-aware woman. And that's why you're so powerful. How do they find the book? Like now I want one. You told me there's one here for me somewhere.
Yes,
right?
I know.
So,
I know.
No, I want it. Like,
it's my son's version. Like,
this is your son's version.
What's cool is he bookmarked, like, so all these pages, he like bent the pages.
Oh, wow.
So that he goes back and he like reads them. His name's in here too. So he loves that.
Oh,
but
wonderful.
I went and read it at a school. And so he's got like 17 pages.
That's so cool.
He earmarked. So if someone comes over and they ask him, him. He has like, well, this is my favorite part, and this is my favorite part. And
wonderful. How do they get it? Can you get it on Amazon?
Amazon, but like indie bookstores.
Okay.
But yeah, all the usual spots.
Congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank
we'll
you.
Put it on my Instagram too. We'll promote it for you. So, a couple more things, real quick, because I'm taking up a bunch of your time. Do you have a mentor? I'm just curious.
I mean, I have a lot. I mean,
do you?
I honestly, listening to you talk, mm-hmm. You could put in mentor in a bunch of different ways. There's probably people that you continuously go back to, but yep. I find that I love learning from people. Mm. Like the reason I got excited about this is I started to really learn about you.
Oh, thank you.
No, but the more you can surround yourself with people that are saying the things that you want to hear in yourself, that to me is that's how mentorship happens. Mm-hmm. It's just surrounding yourself. And even when I was younger, I would literally gravitate to the varsity high school shortstop, mm-hmm. Julie Borchardt. I would literally follow her around everywhere. Mm-hmm. And she was my idol. It was a local person.
Yep.
It was a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
She was going to college. She had a full ride scholarship.
She was big time.
She was big time. Mm-hmm. And I tried to emulate and learn and figure out who she was.
One of the coolest things in life, if everyone has that experience, is to turn a couple of your heroes into your friends. It's the most miraculous, amazing experience, you know? Yeah. I'm conscious of that myself. It's if I'm ever that role for somebody, I always want to be available and accessible to people that's why we do this right here, what we're doing. So what would you say to somebody, even though you wouldn't acknowledge any of that? Someone says, hey, I want to turn my life around. It's not where I want it. I want it better. I want to make my dreams happen. Is there any advice you would give to somebody, man or woman, who they go, I watched the whole show, I'm fascinated. What steps or any advice at all, tactic, thought, idea would you give me to improve my life?
I think it's literally, and we touched on this earlier, but finding what makes you different. Mm-hmm. And I see that in you and your work. Mm-hmm. Is you're not afraid to put out there the real, the mm-hmm. unique. Because we're all different. Yeah. We all are.
Yeah.
And I think what people are craving now more than ever is finding out. So if you're whatever it is, you know, that you're in, whatever age you are, whatever point you are in your life, whether it's personal, whether it's business, is figuring out who the heck you are. And there's definitely something in there that's I don't recognize this in anyone else. Mm-hmm. And normally I think our instinct is to be okay, push that back down. I don't know where you came from, but that's not gonna fit in this room. Mm-hmm. Don't fit in. Just totally stand out. And when I think about standing out, that's what successful people do. They stand out, whether it's because they're smart in a certain way or, but I really believe in the person, and what allows you to continue that success is just to own whoever it is. When you know, everyone knows that part of you.
Yes.
Walks into a room and is this ain't like any of you.
Yes.
And just own that. And you're going to get some weird looks sometimes. Yep. And you're going to get people that are going to be like, she's weird.
Yes.
And kind of be okay with that too.
I love that because I love that because I think through that gift you have is also where your purpose is and your passion. So what you said is I could not answer that any better or differently. I honestly believe every human being was born with some unique blessing or gift or multiple ones to them. It could be your communication skills, your intensity, your math skills, nurturing, humor, beauty, kindness, listening skills, but you have them. And when you can just get quiet and allow yourself a little bit of credit, go, that's one thing I'm good at. You know, because people have this long list of stuff, I'm not any good at this. But you were born with a gift. You were born with some blessings. And one of the great joys of your life is when you discover that. And then if you really want to be happy, you take that gift and that blessing and you use it towards doing good work for other people. And now you've got a formula for being fulfilled. And so.
And not just for them, but connecting with them. And that's what you do. It's not just, I want to use this for you. It's taking that and being I'm going to use this so that we can just meet in this way. And then you take whatever you created there and you take that to the next level. And you meet all these amazing people. And then you end up just spreading that, whatever that is, whatever you just found. Together.
Yeah.
Instead of it just being me giving this to you. It's no, we're giving each other.
Yeah. I think you just described you better than you described me. I think that's literally what you've been doing all your life, all the way from in the Olympics walking over there to the Iraqi athlete, all the way to the way you described your relationship in the booth with your family, and then with the book, and then here today. I think you're amazing. I'm so really glad we did this. I knew this was gonna be really good from watching you and admiring you on TV. Then we met, I knew it would be good, and things Alex said, but this exceeded what I thought it would be today.
I'm glad.
I love this. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You helped so many people today. So, hey, everybody, you can follow Jessica on Instagram. Where is that where they should find you?
Jess Mendoza 2.
Jess Mendoza 2 on Instagram. You're already following me probably, but what you need to do is you need to make sure you're subscribed to this podcast if you're listening to the audio, or subscribe to the YouTube version as well. And remember, every day on Instagram, I do the max out 2-minute drill, which means if you make a comment on my Instagram in the first 2 minutes with that hashtag max out next to it in the main post, we do a drawing every day and you get gear from me, books, coaching calls with me and my guests. Today was miraculously, amazingly awesomeness. So thank you so much.
I love all the additives. Yeah,
it was all
miraculously,
wonderful.
Amazingly awesomeness. That's the name of this
one. I'm gonna trademark that. Well, thank you for having me in your home too. So thank you so much. Max out. God bless you, everybody.
This is the Ed Milet Show.